Come on right up into the center here. I think you'll find it easier to hear and it'll be a little more intimate where you are. And you can hear me? Okay. I'm going to leave the door open so that if people come in, they'll find it easy to come in and we won't have any banging of doors. Come on all the way up. All the way up into the... There's some places over here. The closer you are to me, the better I'll feel. I know that, so... Well, I think that we'll get started, and John, I think we're all set up there. Very good. We'll do a little taping of this. This tape will be a little different because if people listen to it, there are going to be times on the tape that's just open silence. And that's a very nice way to tape a spiritual exercise, by the way, because then if you put it into a walk person, why, you can hear the stuff and you know about how long to be quiet and you can just go with the flow. Otherwise you don't know and it's a little complicated. Come on all the way in as close as you can get. Okay, the title of this session is Tithing, an introduction to spiritual communion or spiritual presence, and we're going to experience tithing before this morning is over, and it's going to be related to something that we're going to do tomorrow, and hopefully if you can come tomorrow there'll be a connection not only with what we're doing here but with what Ken Bakken is doing and Doug Dolstad in spirituality of healing, spirituality of the universe, and so on and so forth, because tomorrow we're going to be tithing with the mountain and with the earth and with the cosmos and getting in touch with the so-called non-human world. My name is Dick Swanson. I am from Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. And with that, I think we'll begin. I'd like to go back to just a couple of verses from Nancy Winder's Bible study this morning, which was based on 2 Corinthians, the third chapter. And I thought that it would give us just a remarkable opening and sense of rapport between us so that we understand who we are. We are not a group sitting, gathering around a guru or an expert or something, but we are all people whose lives are filled with the Spirit of God and who are ministers of God, and we all have the same kind of validation and the same access to the same powers and so forth. So my task is simply to be a kind of an introducer and enabler so that we can all experience the enriching adventure called tithing. And from 2 Corinthians, the third chapter, verses 4 through 6. Such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God. Not that we are competent of ourselves to claim anything as coming from us. Our competence is from God, who has made us competent to be ministers of a new covenant. Not in a written code, but in the Spirit. For the written code kills, but the Spirit gives life. And with that, what I would like to do immediately is to just give us all a chance to center into our spirits, and then from there we'll move into tithing. My practice of contemplation and meditation does not require any particular posture. I just suggest that you be comfortable. So sort of wiggle your way into a comfortable position, something that you can hold for about 5 minutes. And when you're there, I think you'll find it comfortable. You don't have to, but I think you'll find it comfortable to close your eyes. I may have my eyes open for just a bit, but that's to watch and see that we're on track, and I'm not going to be watching you. So the nice thing about our eyes closed is that we have a little bit of privacy and we can feel more relaxed in our silence and in our centering. And what we're going to do now is simply move into our hearts. This is all poetry kind of language. Into our hearts, into our center, into our spirit, whatever name you like to give to that point within you which feels like center. If you have difficulty identifying it, think of the place where you feel most deeply should you hear very, very bad news or very, very good news? Where does that happen to you? In your stomach? Does it happen to you in your chest? Does it happen to you sort of in your whole body? We're going to begin now to move toward that, and we're going to do that by simply being aware of our breathing, to feel and hear the breath of life come in and out. That's a way of coming into the now and the here, because we do not breathe yesterday and we do not breathe tomorrow. We breathe always now. And now is when we are alive, and now is the time of God, who speaks of self as I am. Listen to your breathing, feel it, your mind and your body are very busy. Don't try to do anything about that at all. When a thought comes, be aware of it and return to your breathing. If you have a pain or an itch or any kind of physical sensation, just be aware of it and return to your breathing. Your mind will ask you to be elsewhere. Trust that you're all right not following your mind. Just come back to your breathing. If you remember something that you were supposed to do, or if a particular fear comes to your mind, any thought, just say, okay, goodbye, or God be with you. Stay with your breathing. Perhaps it will help you to think of your breathing as a sort of ladder. With each breath, you are moving more deeply into your center. So follow your breathing into your center. Slide with it. Whatever the distractions, simply note them, say okay, goodbye, or God be with you, and continue to slide into your center. The landing will be very soft. And as you become closer to your center, be aware of how open it is, how large it is. There is room for all creation in your center. And your center can be at home in any other center. For all centers, center. just for a moment, rest, be quiet in your center. Perhaps you have been there often, you knew your way, you're quite at home. If you're not used to this, well, now you know the way. And you can go there anytime, no matter where you are. And find the place where the all is, and where you are in the all. Well, follow your breathing again. Think of it again as steps, this time going up. Come up with your breathing. And as you approach this particular moment here in the village center, and your eyes are ready, let them open. They'll open by themselves. And we'll be back. Here, a community of centers, a community of hearts, ready to experience kaizen. There is a conspiracy that's going on in our time. It's a wonderful word, conspiracy. It means spirit together or coming together in spirit. It doesn't have to be bad. There is the book, The Aquarian Conspiracy, that suggests people who are coming together in new ways, people who are no longer satisfied with all of the fragmentation of life, people who are no longer satisfied with the notion that somehow I and my spouse, Lorian, are two different people who are like ships passing in the night, or that we are a room full of a number of individual fragmented people, or that somehow, and Holden is a wonderful place to experience this, that somehow we are here, we are human, that's a mountain back up there, it's a mountain, there are deer out there and they are deer, and all of that fragmentation and isolation and separation that's part of our life. There is a conspiracy that's occurring. Some of it is occurring in the church, but a lot of it is occurring just across cultures and across racial groups and across the ages and across the genders and so forth. A realization that we don't have to be like that anymore, that maybe we're at a point where we're turning a new corner in the whole evolutionary process. That we're a long way from that Neolithic and Paleolithic era when we lived in tribes and villages, and that maybe we're even a long way from the great civilizations, and that possibly, may God be so good to us, we're about to begin to move away from the industrial technological age in which we lived with the illusion that somehow we are separate from the world and we control it. That there is a coming together of the spirit of all that is. And we are that people. I trust that in this community, that we are a people who are seeking a coming together, a reconnecting, if you will, inter-being. That we recognize that we have inter-origination about 14 billion years ago. Whatever it was that happened, however it was that happened, is resulting in us in this room today. And it's going on even from here. Inter-origination and inter-being. If my life is just a life alone, then in the words of Rabbi Hillel, I am nothing. If I am for myself alone, I am nothing. And if I am nothing, then you are nothing. And if you are nothing, I am nothing. Some of you perhaps are scientists and talk about quantum theory and particle theory and so forth. You know that a particular particle, it's almost like the old Buddhist thinking, the tip of a feather contains the entire universe. A speck of dust contains the entire universe. A particular particle has meaning only in relation to all other particles. Me particles, mountain particles, dumbbell particles, Holden particles, us. We're all part of the same thing. And there is an urgency about us. We come to Holden, we may not be thinking of it all the time, but there is a certain urgency because the human trajectory in relationship to the whole universe trajectory seems to be moving in a direction which is terminal, unless there is some kind of major intervention. I think one of the great metaphors of all time here in Holden is that there are these piles of tailings, these results of the mining. And in a way, I'm almost sorry that there is a plan to get rid of them, because they stand as a continual reminder that Holden is a place where people are turning a corner from that mode of existence where we used the earth into a new mode of existence where we are one with all that is, where we are a participant people, that we are a species among species. And where better to see that than in a place where we lived out a life that ignored that, that didn't know it, a life of denial, an addiction to that kind of living that perhaps now places like Holden are beginning to intervene with and lead us into a new kind of healing. Maybe Holden is a recovery center where every day we can identify ourselves as people who are recovering addicts, addicted to the whole industrial technological age, and moving back into a life in a sort of a biosphere where we're all one with all that is. So there's that kind of an urgency that brings us here. And when we begin now in this new age to talk about spirituality, it's no longer adequate to imagine ourselves simply sitting before an altar praying to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Jesus, and Moses, and everybody. That is important. That is part of all that is our God, our Christ, our Abba, Ima, the Spirit, and so forth. But what we need to be doing in our whole spirituality is identifying with the whole. And that means that we have to get out of simply churchly spiritual mentality into intercommunion with all that is. And tithing is a technology, if you will, for getting in touch with all that is. We're going to begin this morning by talking about tithing essentially as being in touch with persons. That'll be our first experience with tithing. I have a couple of assumptions. Number one, that you accept the fact that you are to some degree or another spiritual beings, that the spiritual is real. I also have a second assumption that most of us are very adept at carving ourselves up so that I could go up here and I could put down physical and psychological and spiritual, and we would say, yeah, those are the things that we are. Let me see, this part of me over here, it's as if we're saying is the spiritual, and here is the psychological, and maybe here is the physical, and so on and so forth. We're so used to that. We divide ourselves up, and we have a sort of a broad technology. For example, and I think I'll stay away from the board for a minute if I may, we see ourselves as physical beings, and we know that the mode of physical communication is body to body. It was Saturday night when Phyllis and Jim danced. Jim having a body that did not quite work out the way our bodies worked out, and with great difficulty in movement. Phyllis, a very live, fluid woman, I would imagine in her 50s and so forth, the two of them dancing together. That was a real beautiful physical moment. It involved touching and movement. Then we move to and what we do is we see and we touch and we hug. Last night during the communion, I take it that hugging is part of Holden. I've hugged Gertrude before, and maybe Gertrude, you taught me about hugging. I don't know, you've been here since hugging began or since Holden began, one or the other, I'm not just sure. Dance and all that kind of thing. I hope that we can get back into the early morning exercises. Phyllis was leading that. Jackie Dolstad and I have been talking about doing some things, and Ken knows some things about Tai Chi, the Chinese stuff, and maybe we'll do that tomorrow morning and some of the other mornings. The second level that we're so used to dividing ourselves up into is the psychological level, where our communicating mode is mind to mind. It's the art of communication, and the techniques are essentially very active listening or writing or talking, counseling, that sort of thing. Then we come to that third level, the spiritual level, where it's spirit to spirit. And tithing is essentially called spiritual communication. But when we do it this morning in our initial exercise, you'll discover it involves the whole thing, because our minds will be active, we'll be tithing in our bodies and exercising our spirits. I have a third assumption, and that is that because you're at Holden, you're the kind of people who are maybe willing to let go of some things or move yourself into some new states of being, what have you, and that is the assumption that you'll be willing to let go of these divisions. And for a moment, at least now this morning, that you won't think of yourself as body and mind and spirit, but that you'll just simply be. And that all that we do is going to be spiritual, but essentially all that we do is going to be simply what we do. Try that again. All that we do is what we do. We're not doing it spiritually or physically or mentally. We're just doing it. Okay? There is a certain sense in which those three parts that we've cut ourselves up to can be seen in a Trinitarian kind of formula, that body, mind, and spirit are three in one and one in three. At what point is one not three, and at what point are the ones not also just one? So be Trinitarian this morning. It's really okay. Let's move very directly to tithing, and I'd like to read you a couple of things about tithing. First of all, there is a book which was published about a year and a half ago. It's called Tithing, the Art of Spiritual Presence, and it was written by Lewis Savory and Patricia Byrne, and had my book request list not have been somehow misplaced with my registration, which I mailed in March 23rd and was discovered in June, this book probably would have been here and you could have had a better chance to look at it. But you don't have to have a book to tithe. You tithe simply out of your own being. And the book is neat, but not necessary. I just would like to have you hear a little bit about tithing. The name tithing was first used by Madeleine L'Engle, the story writer, to describe a spiritual technique. And she wrote it in her book, A Wind in the Door. There was a wonderful spiritual angelic being called Prajnoskis, who had a friendly relationship with Meg, an American adolescent girl. And they have a conversation that goes like this. Prajnoskis looked at her with two ringed owl-like eyes and said, "You're beginning to learn how to tithe." "To what?" "Tithe. It's how cherubim talk. It's talking without words, just the same way that I can be myself and not be enfleshed." "But I have to be enfleshed. I need words." "I know, Meg," he replied gently, "and I will keep things worded for you, but it will help if you will remember that cherubim tithe without words among each other. For a human creature, you show a distinct talent for tithing." She blushed slightly at the compliment. Then Savory and Byrne go on, "Not only did Meg have a distinct talent for tithing, but most people also have a natural talent for it and can develop the skill as Meg did. As the story progresses, Meg learns to tithe well in relating to the cherubim. She begins to recognize tithing as a means of spirit-to-spirit presence and also a way to communicate within that presence. However, since thinking and talking out loud are so natural to her, the cherubim Prajnoskis has to remind her from time to time simply to tithe." She hit the clenched fist of one hand against the palm of the other. "Wait, you told me to think. And I'm thinking." "Well, you don't have to think out loud. You don't have to talk to think, after all. You're deafening me. Try to tithe with me, Meg." "I still don't understand tithing. Is it like mental telepathy?" Prajnoskis hesitated. "You might say that mental telepathy is the very beginning of learning how to tithe. But the cherubic language is entirely tithing. With you, with stars, with galaxies, with the salt in the ocean, the leaves of the trees." "But I'm not a cherubim. How do I do it?" "Meg, your brain stores all the sensory impressions it receives, but your conscious mind doesn't have a key to the storehouse. All I want you to do is open yourself up to me so that I can open the door to your mind's storehouse. All right, I'll try. To open herself entirely to the cherubim, to make herself completely vulnerable, was not going to be easy, but she trusted Prajnanoski's implicitly. In 1977, Savory and Byrne wrote to Madeline L'Engle to ask about the etymology of tithing. She wrote back, "While I was writing A Wind in the Door, I spent a long time finding the word I needed and finally came across tithe in Jameson's Scottish Dictionary published in 1856, which I inherited from my grandfather. The first definition is to be manifest, to be manifest. The second, to come in sight. The third, to appear in proper character." And he quotes, "He will tithe in his own colors," in his own colors. With the explanation added, "He will appear without disguise." If you have a comprehensively large English dictionary, and it's not in my Webster's Third International, you might find an entry under the spelling tithe, K-I-T-H-E. That's in there, but not this one, K-Y-T-H-E. Tithe, kith, intimate relationship, kith and kin. Okay, familiar? It's an old Scottish word, as Madeline L'Engle said, derived from the same root as the familiar words kith and kin. Among the definitions found there will probably be something like to show yourself in your own true guise, or to show yourself without any disguise or mask. And that's the way your kith and kin know you, whether it's a mountain or Arden or anyone else. Generically, we call tithing an act of spiritual presence. To be in tithe is consciously to have made your spirit manifest to another in a spiritual relationship. Humans may tithe because we have a spiritual dimension. And the spiritual dimension, and I'm assuming some level of agreement among us on this, we may want to later test it privately or in feedback at some point, the spiritual dimension is present in all creation, and therefore all creation can tithe with us, and we can tithe with all creation. All that ever was, all that is, all that ever will be. When we're done, I'll come back and we'll conclude all of this with a brief passage of Scripture, because sometimes we like to know that it's scriptural. And I'll just tell you, trust me ahead of time, what we're going to do is scriptural. And I'm not being facetious. That's something that's important to us as a Christian community. Let me give you two examples of tithing. We had a student at Augustana College this last spring with acute spinal meningitis. She was in a coma for a week. Her mother had come from Joliet and was, if you can imagine, and I'm sure you can, totally frustrated and totally in despair. She was unable to communicate with her daughter, and it was not at all clear whether her daughter would live or die, or whether, if her daughter should happen to live, that she would be fully human. So here's this mother, Sharon Higgins, in United Medical Center in Moline, Illinois, sitting in the visitor's room, and she's just sitting there. She is almost in a trance. She's almost autistic, cataleptic. And I thought to myself, well, if this summer tithing is going to work at Holden Village, I guess it ought to work here. And if it doesn't work here, it's not going to work in Holden Village. So we sat down in the visitor's room in intensive care, and I said, "Would you like to know about tithing?" Well, she was a Christian woman, and she picked up quickly that it was about spiritual communion. She said, yes, she would. We went through a very quick three steps of tithing, and I took off. And I came back the next morning, and I said, "Sharon, how are you, and how is Christine?" She said, "Well," she said, "I've been with Christine all night." And she said, "We have been in a communication like we have never been in a communication before." She said, "I've been tithing with Christine." And she said, "Just before you came, The doctors have indicated that there is some beginning sign of response. And she said, I don't know what that's all about, but I'm going to keep tithing with Christine. It wasn't that the tithing, we're not talking about magic here. I'm not saying that tithing was curing Christine. I'm not saying that it wasn't. But tithing was a part of the communication. And when communication is present, healing is present in some form or another. Christine Higgins is back at Augustana College. She's just fine. Was tithing a part of it? Yes, I think it was. Was the huge medical team that was part of the process, was that part of it? Yes, of course it was. Was her mother's simple love and presence part of it? Of course it was. Was the air she breathed and so forth part of it? Of course. Was God totally involved in it? Of course. But tithing was one part of it. I have a friend who went through high school with me. We stayed friends through college. He came and visited Lorian and me, Biohare Field, where I had my first parish. And it wasn't too long after that, we were up in Canada one day, and I called home just to talk to my folks, and they said, "Her died yesterday." He was an acute alcoholic. He was acutely addicted to chemicals. He had married, but he was also a gay person and was having difficulty with that, and he died. We had been close friends since boyhood. And there was no way of being there. He was married. I've never met his wife. I have no idea where she lives or who she is. I don't even know where he is buried. His younger brother died early. His mother and father are dead, and his sister is dead. There is no one in the Hooker family left. And so on a couple of occasions, I have had the experience of tithing with Tom Hooker and just simply being with him and sharing my being and allowing his being to come to me. And in some way, it has worked. For years, I just somehow, you know, wanted to say to Tom Hooker, well, I really cared about your situation. And I didn't know how to relate to his addiction at the time, and I didn't know how to relate to his gayness either. Now through tithing, I can be present to his spirit, which is not addicted, and which is neither gay nor straight, simply his spirit. And we can be like that. The purpose of tithing, when we do it interpersonally, is communion, it's healing, it's giving strength, it's giving comfort, it's reconciling, it's loving, and it's being loved. It's a way, for example, let's suppose that you just feel that you don't amount to a whole lot, but you know somebody that you think does, you can tithe with them. And in the spirit, you can simply allow what you feel to be that person's gifts of serenity, or strength, or identity, to flow into you. It can be the reverse, too. I am tithing each day that I am here with a 20-year-old Augustana College student who knows that I'm tithing with her and has decided that that might be better until July 12th than committing suicide. So we're tithing together. Because she's been in the whole mindset that when her mind says to her, Mary, you're a pile of shit, she's supposed to believe that. Because if our mind tells us that, well then, you know, we got to believe our mind. I said, Mary, why don't you give your mind a hug sometime? She said, my mind won't let me do it. Mary, look at your left hand. Can you imagine your left hand telling you that you can't stroke it with your right hand? No, she said, I can't. Well, how is your mind essentially different from that? Well, but I am a pile of shit, and there's no reason to go on. I really would be happy or dead. So we're tithing every day. I wish I could define it. I am seeing myself simply sitting on the couch in her sort of barren living room where she's living with another student for the summer temporarily. She's sitting there crying while she's supposed to be at speech therapy clinic working this summer. And everybody else who's at speech therapy clinic has all of their shit together. She doesn't. So we're tithing, okay? What I'd like to have you do, as I begin to tell you the steps of tithing, is to have you begin to think of someone that you'd like to tithe with this morning for just a few minutes, and then take the technique with you and do with it as you will. Remember that tithing is a matter of the spirit. And what are the dimensions of the spirit? Are they limited to the present moment? Does the Spirit reach out into yesterday and tomorrow? Can the Spirit reach that part of being which is, quote, dead, unquote? Is there any place in all of creation where Spirit is not present, and therefore is there a place where Spirit can move? So, for now, we're going to think personally, but it can be somebody who's dead. And it certainly can be somebody who is far, far away. In fact, I know of one instance where an expectant father, feeling real distance between himself and the fetus that he and his spouse were producing, tried tithing with the fetus, being present to the spirit of the fetus, and began to establish for him a much more significant relationship than simply putting his hand on her abdomen and feeling the baby kick, which was also a form of tithing, of course. But to be able to move into the fetus's spirit became for him a very important thing. There are three very simple steps to tithing. I think this will be about the only time I'll use the board. But before I do that, let me write on here, Madeline Langle, Louis Savory, and Patricia Byrne. Madeline Langle thought up the word, but it's only a concept that all of us are aware of, right? Haven't we all been in touch with somebody or something or felt something with us? What we're talking about this morning is a technology for doing something that is inherently natural for all of us. But without the technology, maybe we haven't been in touch with how we can do it at will and in a very intentional kind of way. Okay. Step one, and we really already did this. That was the purpose of that initial centering and relaxation. Step one is to center. Step two is to focus, and step three is to commune. Now, there are a couple of little liturgies that go with this that I find helpful, and tithing is going to be your own technology, so you can do with it as you please. I find that it's helpful, before doing this, to say, God, I would like to tithe with Mary. Please, thank you. And just trust that. Now, I'm not going to sit around and wait for some sort of revelation to come that God has now said, okay, it's not like putting your American Express card through a machine in Bergen, Norway, and waiting for some sort of satellite to come back and say, yeah, he's got enough money left in his account, and he can do it. No, God, I would like to tithe with Mary. Thank you very much. Just trust it. We're not talking fancy, or we're not talking about being absolute or being utterly sincere and all that kind of stuff. We're just going to tithe. Mary, I'd like to tithe with Mary, God. Thank you very much. And then center. The simplest way of centering is to follow breathing. Because breathing is always in the center. I'll repeat, we don't breathe yesterday or tomorrow. We're always breathing now. Our mind wants to be everywhere except now, because now is where God is, and now is where life is, and our mind, which wants to be God, doesn't want to be where God is, because then it's going to be found out that it isn't God. Okay? So our mind is always back there trying to rework what I said yesterday to somebody. Should I really have said shit in Holden Village? Well, I guess the answer is okay. Or it's out in the future. You know, how do you feel about me? Are you going to like me tomorrow? That great statement that somebody said, I think it was Jackie Brosma. Hi, my name is Jackie Brosma. How do you like me so far? You know? Or my mind is protecting me, or it's attacking somebody, or it's trying to deceive me, or it's trying to have control over somebody else. No, we just center and follow the breathing. And every time we become aware of anything other than our breathing, we just say, okay, and we name it. Thinking about sex, thinking about work, a thought about guilt or a feeling of guilt, just name it and say, okay, goodbye, God be with you. It's okay. Center through breathing. Some people say, just say your name over and over again. Herbert Benson at Harvard says, just count 1, 2, 3, up to 10 and start over again. And if there's any interruption that comes on, start over. Just count like that until you begin to relax. We're not talking about anything absolute. To be centered does not mean to be absolutely something. It just means that you feel a little more in connection with your deep center than you did before. And that's what happens when we just relax there for a moment. I would guess that you felt at least a little more centered to yourself than you did before we went through that 5-minute period. Not absolutely. And when you feel relatively that you're in touch with yourself, because it's your own spirit, your heart, that you're going to tithe with, just simply say, I am present to my spirit. That's the liturgy of part one. God, I'd like to tithe with Ken. Thanks. I just quietly become aware of my present moment, where my heart, where my spirit is, through breathing or naming myself or counting or whatever you want to do to get in there. And when you're there, I am present to my spirit. Then focus. I picture Mary sitting on the couch in the living room of their apartment. She's sitting with her legs crossed like this, and she's wearing shorts, and her face is streaming down with tears, and she is telling me that she is a pile of shit. That's how I am picturing her. Because I didn't really know her that well. I don't have a lot of other pictures of her, so I have to go back to that one. But maybe the person that you're going to tithe with is a person whose voice evokes that person's presence in you. Or maybe the scent, or a particular moment when you were with that person. So just go to that and focus on that. I find it helpful to begin by here by saying, Mary, I'm going to tithe with you. I don't mean to put that in some sort of imperialistic way, as though she doesn't really have any choice, but then after all, we're talking about the realm of the spirit. My spirit is not going to harm Mary's spirit. It's not an area or realm of fear or power or attack or imposition or hierarchy. No, it's just a matter of withness. Mary, I'm going to tithe with you. And then I focus on her. I let the picture come back up into my mind. And when that picture becomes relatively clear, don't look for absolutes. Don't wait for some great shining light to come and say, ah, now I focus. No, just begin to do that. And when you're relatively focused, just say, I am present to your spirit, Mary or Ken or mother or child or whatever. And then commune. And this means that we're willing to take our spirit and either put our spirit into the spirit of the other person or allow that other person's spirit to come into us or simply to bring ourselves together in some way. A lot of people find it helpful to picture a circle of light coming from God and both of us enter into that circle and we're just there. And it is there in that communion that life at its deepest level moves back and forth between us. It is communion, united.
It's not control, together. It's
not control at all. No, it's just being. Our spirits are never, for example, codependent. Mm-hmm. All right? That's in another realm of us. We can trust our spirits to be very open, very collegial places. Our spirits are accustomed to life together without hierarchy or power, control.
So are you saying that the spirits are free from any kind of evil? Or?
Yeah.
You raise a very good question. Our spirits are deeply forgiven because we live in grace. Our spirits are no more evil than we are evil. We are simul justus et peccator. We are at the same time justified and sinners. Our spirits are there. Our spirits are deeply loved by God and deeply connected with God. And it's a place where we can get into and realize that thinking of ourselves as sinful is not the only thing we have to do with ourselves. We can think of ourselves as beautiful and free and open and deeply forgiven. It's where we just practice the deepest gift, which is the forgiveness of sins. Our spirits are deeply forgiven. Our minds don't want to deal with that because our minds want to stay busy earning the spot. Okay? But our spirits don't try to do that. Our spirits simply receive God's love and forgiveness.
Can I go with it a little further?
Go ahead.
I think the feeling I get is a matter, I started to wonder, can I trust this? Can I trust you? Like, is it the same if I commute with my wife who's sleeping up in the hotel, or if I do it with Adolf Hitler, or...
You can do it with any part of creation. You can do it with creation, which has both parts and no parts at all. It's just all one.
Are you wondering if you're going to be harmed by it? Or?
Yeah, or if it's something that's beneficial.
Vulnerability. Yeah.
All right. Try using the image that God is the creator of heaven and earth, of all that is. And God has one deep will that all should be one as God is one. And so God does not allow this spirit process to become harmful. Why would that be?
I affirm that totally, but I think his question is terribly important.
It is.
I think there are evil things in the spirit world. And I think it's not that we trust the spirit, it's that we trust God. And God will overcome the evil.
Good. We trust the Spirit of God, which is never evil. We're trusting really the Holy Spirit.
But there are evil spirits.
There are evil spirits. There is evil. There's no question about that. And part of tithing is a way of overcoming evil with good. Okay. Okay, Ken?
I'm hearing this discussion and I when people come out of brokenness and their own pain, and they're vulnerable, and we're talking about principalities and powers and evil, affirming that as you did, is there not a sense of being very intentional about surrounding oneself with the light and presence of God, that we can't be touched by that? I mean, Agnes Sanford years ago talked about surrounding oneself with the healing light of God. That I get a little worried about opening oneself up, one's collective unconscious to the principalities and powers as well as to the Spirit of God. Maybe you can address that a little more.
Well, okay, try these. God is the one in whom we live and move and have our being.
Yeah.
That is where we communicate. Right. God's desire that we express through Jesus that we may all be one, as Jesus and Abba Ima are one. And the beginning liturgy, God, I would like to tithe with Mary. I begin with that request so that it is understood that it is through the power of God and the enablement of God that this whole process takes place. And it's a matter of trusting that. One might think of going into all the world with the gospel, the Great Commission. All the world. Going to the powers and the principalities, the dark places and so on and so forth. Or Jesus going into hell, the descent into the totality of all darkness, of all evil, and so forth.
But when one goes into a meditative state, one can meet the principalities and powers and can be awfully frightening. I've seen people where they've just been scared. And where they need to call upon the name of Jesus and the Spirit of God to come. It's not always just wonderful. That's the question I have. That sometimes when you enter that...
That's analogous to our encountering temptation of evil.
It's a little like the press... In a way, it's like, where is there not evil? Because to talk about love and to talk about goodness is always to talk about evil, which is that which gives definition to love and goodness. Arden?
Well, it seems to me part of what's being raised here is, can you have, then, if this is a methodology, but for Christian folk, can we do that apart from God's revelation in His Word? The responses that you gave as a sort of a framework or a liturgy, forgetting that those were scriptural quotes or foundations, it seems to me. So if we're to do that as Christian folk, then, you know, to think instead of your words in the earlier on that use the language of all. I mean, it seems to me we have to think of, we're going to have some security about that. Jesus is all in all. Mm-hmm. The Christ is all in all. We have to have some kind of a framework forgiving that. That's not a mental, indeed it is a spiritual framework. Is that?
Yes, to tithe through the Spirit, to tithe through Jesus is to tithe with that which out which nothing was made that was made. You go back to the beginning of John. No matter where you go with this tithing, as a child of God, you are going into the dimension where God is present, and yet where there is always that other side of freedom and creation, which is the contraries.
Yeah.
Embracing the contraries in our tithing. Okay.
I think that's a significant thing, is the naming of the name. I mean, it is praying in my name. You know, don't we have to, isn't there a part of the revelation that we're called to do that? Otherwise, we do open to whatever kind of spirit. I don't know. I'm working with this. I'm not trying to make a judgment.
It seems to me we're just open to that as we sit here. Our spirits are here and they're available, and there are all those other spirit entities that you know that are there. And are we not more vulnerable in our innocence of the spirit than we would be by our own of the spirit?
I think the hierarchy is so much so sticky and our fears of being overcome by evil that we've forgotten that God is the center power that we're focusing on here, and in the midst of God's presence, you don't have to worry about that stuff. I mean, I'm hearing you affirming that spiritual journey based on God's goodness is one of freedom, not one of having to worry and look behind every bush that there's some evil working there to capture your spirit.
Thanks. The route into the all, where Abba Ema's house is, and there are rooms and mansions, is a route which is traversed before us by one who goes before us. And no matter where we're going, even into the heart of darkness, that one has gone there before. And darkness is on the way to the light. I mean, it's clearly there. I'm watching our time because I want to give you just a moment now to practice these three things. We're going to come into a very different kind of approach tomorrow when we talk about tithing with the mountain, because that's going to involve yet another dimension of trust and another quantum leap in terms of the way in which we view existence in creation. So that'll be a little different thing. And tomorrow, there's a lot of neat things to talk about there. For example, the deer that wanted to come to communion last night but was confused about whether or not it needed to come to communion, and so it stayed outside. Okay. The first step, remember, is to center. So what I'd like you to do, if you will, all I ask that you do, the basic minimum, is to close your eyes. If you just want to rest and you don't want to try this, that's really okay. But if you just close your eyes, and I will at least keep my eyes down so you're not being watched by anybody, and we're going to do this for a period of not more than about 5 minutes, because I think there's going to be a bell that rings in there somewhere. We're going to begin by centering, and if you will, for this time, you may find it helpful, either use your own method of centering, because many of you, I'm sure, have done contemplation and meditation, or simply begin by getting in touch with your breathing, being comfortable, closing your eyes, and begin to listen and feel your breathing. Or name your name. Use the name that, in your heart, you use in calling yourself. But stay with your breathing and recognize any kind of thought, any distraction, any sense of evil or darkness, even the good feelings. Just notice them, be aware of them. Trust that they are in God, and that God will keep them, and that God will protect you. Just follow your breathing. Slide down with it, if that helps, toward your center, toward your heart, toward your spirit. Breathe naturally. Centering is not an artificial, contrived process. Now, to come back to the first part of the liturgy, if you have decided on the person with whom you wish to tithe, simply ask the Lord to tithe, to allow this tithing to occur. You might say, Lord, please help me tithe with Mary. Thank you, and trust that. And as you begin relatively to reach your center, when you feel just in touch with yourself, perhaps just by feeling and hearing your breathing rather clearly in the midst of the distractions, say, I am present to my spirit. Later you may wish to use more time with this, or it can be done even more quickly. But complete step one by saying, I am present to my spirit. Wherever you are at this particular moment in this exercise, just... And then tell the person with whom you are going to tithe that you're going to do that. Mary, I'm going to tithe with you. Maybe you want to add, thank you. That's a courtesy. You'd do it in normal speech. And then allow the pictures of that person, a person who may no longer be living. It could be a person who is a fetus, whatever. Just simply focus on that person. It can be Jesus. It can be the saints. It can be God as mother or father. Just allow the image to come and stay with that. And when you begin to feel somewhat focused, maybe the analogy with the slide projector, the automatic focus, when the person with whom you wish to tithe begins to come into focus, simply say, my spirit is present to your spirit, or I am present to your spirit. And that completes part two, focusing. And now let the two spirits come together. Perhaps you allow your spirit to go and be present in the spirit of the other, or you welcome the other's spirit into your heart. It may be that you feel a little resistance. Let that be. Be as close as you can. And in order to seal that moment, when you allow the spirits to come together, either in a pool of God's light or being held in God's hands, or being together in a familiar place, walking, driving in a car, seated at a table, sharing a meal, seal that by saying, we are one in the Spirit, or we are present spirit to spirit. It helps to use these intentional terms that mark the way. And now just be there. Are you allowing love to flow back and forth? Are you offering your healing? Are you receiving healing? Are you simply being together? And when you do tithing on your own, you can continue as long as you wish, or you can make it as brief as you wish. People tithe while driving, while walking or jogging, while doing dishes, tending a child, working in the garden, operating a computer. But a courtesy is simply to say, thank you. Thank you, God. Thank you, naming the person. And then goodbye. God be with you. And then allow your eyes, when they're ready, to open. Come out of the kithe. You don't have to kithe with your eyes closed. We're just doing that this morning as part of the exercise. When you're ready, let your eyes open. And tomorrow, should you come a second time for kithing, I'd like to have you, if you've been at all interested, as I have been, in the conversation about the matter of evil and about the perils and so forth of kithing. Remember that those perils are not simply limited to the interpersonal realm, but the mountain that is behind us can let go huge avalanches of rock in rock slides, avalanches of snow that kill. There are mountains of great beauty that become Mount St. Helens. There are floods and droughts and so forth. There are trees that fall and crush the pelvis of a friend of Lorian and mine while they were out camping. In our relationship with the natural world, there are great powers which can be very destructive. And there again, we have to trust in God's presence in all that is. So you might want to think about that a little bit. Thank you very much for coming. And we'll do things like this the rest of the week, and you, however many of you want to, glad to have you come.